Welcome to today's reading of Sports Today, a one-hour reading of sports news from 7 to 8 p.m. every Tuesday and Thursday. My name is Bill, volunteer reader here at Sun Sounds of Arizona. Let's begin today's reading with a feature that's entitled NFL Draft's 10 Biggest Boom or Bust Prospects. And this feature written by Michael Middlehurst Schwartz of USA Today. There's no such thing as a truly safe pick in the NFL draft. With so many variables at play as players make a sizable jump in their careers, the trajectory for every prospect comes with little certainty. But whether it's due to subpar production or unrealized potential, several future picks annually stand out from their peers by sparking particularly divisive evaluations. It's up to team decision makers then to weigh their risk tolerance against the payoff for any particular player who could either make franchises look foolish either for drafting them or for passing on them. With this year's class igniting several notable debates among big-name players, here are the 10 biggest boom or bust prospects in the NFL draft, ranked by just how much risk and upside they entail. Number 10 on the list is Bishal Tuten, running back from Virginia Tech. As a likely middle-round draft pick, Tuten might not be as risky as other players who will necessitate a heavier investment of draft capital, but the volatility in his game is readily evident. A transfer from North Carolina A&T, the former track star averaged 6.3 yards per carry last season and ripped off the fastest 40-yard time at 4.32 seconds of any running back at the NFL scouting combine. Not just an outstanding linear athlete, Tuten can keep runs alive by making defenders miss in the open field and fighting through contact. It should come as no surprise that a player with singular explosiveness has a problem with patience. Rather than letting blocks develop in front of him, Tuten too often is content to bounce the play to the outside. That approach won't be tenable at the next level, so the 5'9", 206-pound ball carrier will need to be more decisive and take what is given to him on the inside. If he can manage that, he could stay on the field while making his mark as one of the league's preeminent big play threats. But if he struggles to adapt or continues to be plagued by fumbles, he may end up as an all-or-nothing runner. So Bishal Tuten is number 10 on the list. Number 9 is Shavon Revell Jr., a cornerback at East Carolina. If not for a torn anterior cruciate ligament suffered in September, Revel could easily be the conversation for the first round. The 6'2", 194-pounder evokes comparisons to Richard Sherman and Antonio Cromartie as a smothering coverage presence who is at his most comfortable jockeying with receivers, whether that is at the line of scrimmage or at the catch point. Between his hyper-physical approach and penchant for finding the ball, Revel can handle either zone or man assignments. But even though Revel is expected to be ready in time for training camp, his injury cannot be ignored. Beyond sparking concerns about his ability to stay on the field, it also robbed him of the opportunity to polish his game. Like most taller cornerbacks, Revel has lapses when he can get too uptight, leaving him susceptible to being shaken in man coverage by quicker receivers. with a significant jump in quality of competition ahead, flags could follow him early if he doesn't dial back his handsy approach. Number 8 in the list of draft picks, James Pierce Jr., defensive end from Tennessee. A fixture of way too early mock drafts 1 year ago, Pierce now might be teetering on the edge of the first round. What happened? The 6'5", 245-pounder hardly disappointed last season, notching his second consecutive first-team All-Southeastern Conference honor after tallying 13 tackles for loss and 7.5 sacks. Rather, Pierce's final showings only underscored the ways in which he would come to be seen as a polarizing prospect for teams. There's no questioning Pierce's explosiveness off the line of scrimmage, which allows him to zip past blockers or jolt them back when they're on their heels. Yet that same aggressiveness at the start of his rush can also prove problematic at the end, as Pierce struggles to regain control in space and wrap up quarterbacks or ball carriers who should be easily in his grasp. Without a runway to the passer, Pierce can have trouble bending to complete the play or disengaging blockers. With lingering concerns about whether he can hold up against the run, Pierce will have to show growth as a pass rusher to properly harness his considerable upside. And number 7 on the list of the 10 biggest boom or bust prospects, Tetero McMillan, wide receiver from Arizona. A 6'4", 219-pound target with an extensive track record of bailing out his quarterback sounds like the kind of player who would have a relatively high floor. While McMillan is sure-handed and can win in multiple ways, there are critical concerns about the core of his game that could go a long way towards determining his effectiveness. As someone able to consistently win in college thanks to his massive catch radius and ability to box out, McMillan regularly was content to overpower defensive backs rather than free himself of them. That tendency has left questions of whether he can consistently create separation when working downfield, with his rudimentary route tree only exacerbating the issue. While he can thrive in the short to intermediate game by securing slants and creating mismatches, it will be a tall task to expect his future quarterback to repeatedly trust him on contested catch scenarios when looking deep. Number 6 on the boom or bust prospects list is Darian Porter, cornerback for Iowa State. A sixth-year breakout with limited experience at his position might seem like an inherent contradiction. But after flipping from wide receiver to cornerback midway through his career at Iowa State and only becoming a starter in his final campaign, Porter stands out as a tricky yet tantalizing prospect. There might not be a better overall athlete at the position in this year's draft than the 6'3", 195-pounder who ran a 4.3-second 40 and had a 10'11" broad jump. With his receiver background on display whenever he closes in on the ball, it is easy to see why some envision him as the kind of supersized playmaker that Seattle Seahawks cornerback Rick Woolen was as a Pro Bowl selection in his 2022 rookie campaign. But Porter's inexperience looms over his draft stock and his acclimation period to the NFL. With underdeveloped instincts and a scarcity of work in man coverage, he could be exploited by crafty route runners early in his career. His optimal outcome is landing with a zone-heavy team that will allow him to work on the finer points of coverage more gradually. Growing pains, however, appear to be inevitable. Number 5 on the list, Walter Nolan, defensive tackle from Ole Miss. At times, it is easy to see why Nolan was once ranked right alongside Travis Hunter as one of the best college football recruits in the country. After transferring from Texas A&M, the 6'4", 296-pounder broke out as a consensus All-American last season with 14 tackles for loss and 6.5 sacks. He gets offensive linemen off balance from the snap with his explosive burst, and he is equally adept at shooting gaps and finishing plays off in the backfield. Still, the flashy contributions only tell part of the story. When Nolan is not snapping past a blocker right away, his results can be a little more uneven, as he still needs to develop counter moves and improve his overall hand usage. Without an ability to figure out a way to win later on downs, he could continue to run hot and cold throughout games. Number 4 on the list, Luther Burden III, wide receiver from Missouri. With the ball in his hands, Burden is as big as a threat as any wide receiver in this class. The 5-star recruit has a knack for making would-be tacklers miss in the open field with his quick cuts, but the 6-foot, 206-pounder also isn't afraid to get physical when fighting for position in traffic or lowering a shoulder into defenders. Yet at this point in his career, Burden is far more of a general offensive weapon than a finished product at wideout. Missouri's scheme went to great lengths to get him open in space, feeding him a heavy dose of targets near the line of scrimmage, while also trying to create favorable matchups downfield. The result is that Burden is neither sudden nor precise as a route runner, and he might require manufactured touches to be involved in the game plan early in his career. His shortcomings can all be addressed, and he shows upside as someone comfortable tracking deep shots and hauling in throws away from his frame. But after averaging just 11.1 yards per catch in 2024's uninspiring follow-up to his second-team All-American campaign, Burden has to demonstrate that he is ready to take on more than what the Tigers' offense afforded him. And number 3 on the list, Cam Ward, quarterback from Miami. Of course, the expected number 1 pick has to be on the list. From his stops at Incarnate Word and Washington State to his breakout season with the Miami Hurricanes, Ward built his game off an embrace of decisions that others might eschew. The 6'2", 219-pound passer consistently lives on the edge with his attacking mentality, firing the ball into tight windows and looking to capitalize on opportunities when things break down. While he no doubt will be asked to tap into his playmaking streak in the pros, Ward might face a significantly lower tolerance for the kind of throws that could easily become turnovers. As he extends plays, and Ward is quite good at avoiding sacks and taxing defenses with his scrambling ability, he becomes prone to searching for chunk plays rather than taking what is afforded to him. Although he is instinctive within structure from the pocket, his proclivity for holding on to the ball until the last possible moment can be his undoing. For a player often compared to Patrick Mahomes, thanks to his dynamic ability to force defenses out of their comfort zone, the goal should be to emulate the more discerning quick trigger phase of the Kansas City Chiefs quarterback career in recent years than his wild introduction to the league. Number two on the list is Shamar Stewart, defensive end from Texas A&M. The high-end traits are all there. The production is not. The dichotomy between what Stewart can achieve as a pass rusher and what he has managed to yield has stirred significant debate about his value in a deep class of edge rushers. Ultimately, it will be on general managers to stack him up against his more accomplished peers and determine whether he can translate his considerable athleticism. Thus far, the disconnect has been impossible to ignore. The 6'5", 267-pound, five-star recruit managed 1.5 sacks in each of his 3 seasons in College Station. While that can partially be attributed to his usage, the Aggies deployed him in a manner that did not afford him as many true edge reps. He also exhibited a concerning habit for missing tackles, often simply falling off the ball carrier when he was in position to make a play. With his ability to capitalize off his quick burst off the line of scrimmage and powerful yet fluid movements, Stewart should at least be able to generate pressure with regularity. But a potential top 20 pick is going to be expected to finish plays, and he might be defined by his ability to grow in that area. And number one on that top 10 list of boom or bust prospects, Jalen Milroe, quarterback from Alabama. He might be the draft's most compelling conundrum. At 6'2" and 217 pounds with breakaway speed and superlative arm strength, he can devastate defenses when everything clicks. And with nearly 500 total yards and 4 total touchdowns in a thrilling win over Georgia, Milroe has shown that he can stand tall against the stoutest competition. But the expected leap in his second season as a starter never fully materialized, and instead erratic play, including a late-season unraveling against unranked Oklahoma that dashed the Crimson Tide's college football playoff hopes, became the hallmark of his 2024 campaign. Shaky mechanics are to blame for much of the problem, as Milroe can be wildly off the mark at all 3 levels when he's rushing things. And when he is not going to his first read, there's a level of discomfort to his play that is reflected by a lack of touch on his throws and an eagerness to bail on clean pockets. There's no questioning his distinct value as a developmental passer, but there is substantial work to be done before he can be fully trusted to handle NFL defenses. And again, that feature is entitled NFL Draft's 10 Biggest Boom or Bust Prospects, written by Michael Middlehurst Schwartz of USA Today. And staying on the topic of the NFL Draft, the next headline reads, "Is Carter the Draft's Game Changer?" This feature, written by Frank Badani of the York, Pennsylvania Daily Record. Abdul Carter almost surely will be the highest Penn State football NFL draft pick in 7 years. The ever-confident, game-wrecking edge rusher believes that he should go number 1 overall. He's made his case to be the first overall pick of the Tennessee Titans, first during interviews at the NFL Scouting Combine in February, then at Penn State Pro Day in late March. He may well have a good case. Consider what he accomplished in just 1 season at a new position, such as leading all FBS players in tackles for loss. I feel like I'm just getting started, Carter told reporters in Penn State's practice facility in late March. This was my first year playing a new position, and I feel like I was the best at it. I dominated at it. I feel like the sky's the limit, unquote. Here are four things to know about Carter heading into the NFL draft. First, Carter expects to be Penn State's first top five draft pick since running back Saquon Barkley was number two going to the New York Giants in 2018. Carter could ultimately become Penn State's first number one pick since Courtney Brown, another defensive end. He was the first pick of the 2000 draft by the Cleveland Browns. Penn State and NFL star pass rusher Micah Parsons, by comparison, was the 12th pick of the 2021 draft. Penn State's top five draft picks since joining the Big Ten, running back Kijana Carter, who was number one pick in 1995, quarterback Kerry Collins, the number five pick in 1995, running back Curtis Enos, the number five pick in 1998, Brown, the number one pick in 2000, and Arrington, number two pick in 2000, and offensive tackle Levi Brown, the number five pick in 2007, and Barkley, the number two pick in 2018. Next question, how dominant was Carter last year at Penn State? Though just his first season as an edge rusher, Carter led all FBS players in total tackles for loss and was tied for third in TFLs per game. He was fourth nationally with 12 sacks and was credited with 9 quarterback hurries. Opposing offensive linemen desperately tried to hold him regardless of penalty implications on passing downs. Carter earned all Big Ten honors at linebacker during his first 2 seasons at Penn State. Carter has been slowed but not deterred by injuries. Carter did not work out at the NFL Combine or Penn State's Pro Day, he said, because of rehabbing a shoulder injury suffered in Penn State's college football playoff victory over Boise State. A stress reaction in his foot also was discovered at the Combine, though Carter has elected to bypass surgery. He said he was nearly at full health at the end of March. NFL teams do not seem deterred in the least. According to reports, he's had in-depth meetings with the 4 NFL teams that own the top picks in the draft, the Titans, the Cleveland Browns, New England Patriots, and up to 5 teams with the New York Giants in the pre-draft process. He turned down all visits with teams picking outside the top 5, according to ESPN's Adam Schefter, and says that his injuries will be a non-issue before reporting to official NFL workouts at the end of May. What makes Carter so valuable and so unique? Carter stars as one of the critical, desired positions in the NFL, edge rusher. He combines a nearly unmatched quickness and burst off the line of scrimmage with a relentless game motor. His pursuit speed is dynamic. His top-shelf production is proven. Here is what Mike Freeman, USA Today Sports Deputy Managing Editor, wrote about Carter earlier this month. Quote, stuff I'm hearing about Carter. Best athlete in the draft. Titans with the first pick, seriously considering taking him. 10 years from now, when everyone looks back to evaluate this draft, he will be viewed as its best player. Teams are considering offering a bevy of picks to move up and get him. Teams like his personality. Coaches that have met him love him. On and on it goes. may be the best way to put it, he could be the surest thing possible, unquote. When asked why he should be the number one pick in the draft, Carter said this, "My overall impact on the game, my versatility to play multiple positions, and probably most importantly, I step up when I'm needed the most. When crunch time comes around and they need somebody to make that big play, I'm the guy who makes that big play," unquote. And again, that feature is entitled, "Is Carter the Draft's Game Changer?" written by Frank Badani of the York Daily Record. And from college football draft news, let's turn to some Major League Baseball news. Next headline reads, "Major League Baseball needs to show some resilience." This feature written by Gabe Lackus, columnist for USA Today. In the nearly three decades since Major League Baseball has turned April 15th into a de facto industry holiday, there have been years in which celebrating Jackie Robinson has felt downright paradoxical. You could say that 2025 qualifies. The game is right to celebrate its most impactful participant, an American civil rights hero whose courage in breaking baseball's color line at its highest level should always be taught, even if his example and his message are subject, like Martin Luther King, to bad faith actors co-opting and twisting it beyond recognition. Within baseball, it has been a complex dynamic. Noble gestures such as retiring his number 42 throughout Major League Baseball and all players donning it each April 15th are juxtaposed against backsliding black representation in the player population and inconsistent organizational commitments from front office diversity. The events of the past month, plus when Major League Baseball scrubbed references to quote-unquote diversity from its career's homepage, and the Department of Defense deleted references to Robinson's military service before restoring it under pressure, and Robinson's Dodger franchise uncritically visited the president who made all of the above possible, create an unsettling reality that resonates even more on Jackie Robinson Day. We simply cannot count on our institutions to save us. The voters have opted for what they believe to be rugged individualism, so long as it doesn't hit home too hard for them. The man they elected to lead them wants us to believe the proverbial playing field has long been leveled for everyone, even as his family's legacy was built on virulent discrimination. And even as his hand-picked choices for crucial leadership positions air in a manner that suggests fealty and cronyism and not qualifications drove from their hiring, private entities have felt compelled to fall in line. In short, Major League Baseball needs to keep it pushing. The league has come relatively far since the year 1987, when Dodgers general manager Al Campanis found that he couldn't use his late friend Robinson as a human shield when he claimed that blacks lacked the quote-unquote necessities to lead a front office or manage a ball club. The question posed by Ted Koppel that led to Campanis' downfall simply asked why there were no black general managers, or owners in the game. In the years since, black managers Cito Gaston, Dave Roberts, and Dusty Baker have won World Series championships, as have Latino skippers Alex Cora, Dave Martinez, and Ozzie Guillen. Ken Williams constructed the White Sox team that, with Guillen, ended an 88-year championship drought. Yet, Today's landscape reveals one black general manager, Dana Brown, and three managers, Roberts, the White Sox Will Venable, and the Angels Ron Washington. The future offers mixed signals. Black player participation peaked, according to various estimates, sometime in the late 1970s and early 1980s. Washington, now age 72, might represent the last of that group of former players in the managerial ranks. There are 9 black assistant general managers, along with 5 Latino assistant GMs, and 4 of Middle Eastern, Indian American, or Asian descent. Almost all are what one might consider baseball lifers, entering the industry at the ground level and working their way closer to the executive suite, even if some have specific concentrations in international scouting or finance. And none were products of Major League Baseball's diversity pipeline program, which those obsessed with purging the D word from society might find surprising. That fact proves a couple of interesting points. One, that diverse executives in baseball not only got there on merit, but almost certainly did, in fact, have to grind harder than their counterparts. Two, that inclusion efforts take time. It's been a decade since Major League Baseball initiated the Diversity Pipeline program, which came at a time when franchise obsession with Ivy League analytics was arguably at its peak and front offices took on a largely monochromatic sheen. The diversity program has produced more than 400 hires within organizations. Even as front offices aim to outflank their rivals, upward mobility remains challenging. Yet it seems inevitable that program grads will eventually crack the C-suite, even if nepotism and cronyism will always provide obstacles. Nurturing black prospects on the field is similarly challenging. The league operates 9 youth academies in urban areas and touts its myriad baseball development programs. Yet the former feels like a band-aid in an era when the cost of entry to the sport only gets higher, while the latter groups together players who have already demonstrated proficiency in the game. Still, they are important efforts, if only to gather dozens of kids who likely are the only black players on their own teams back home and introduce them to peers going through similar experiences. Many of those bonds will likely last well into adulthood. Meanwhile, relief could come in the wild west of amateur ball. Name, image, and likeness, or NIL, opportunities have changed the calculus for athletes aiming to continue their careers collegiately. Onerous NCAA scholarship limits often serve to push away the athlete who could not afford cost of attendance at a baseball power if they received, say, a 1/4 share of a scholarship. While Major League Baseball's truncated 20-round draft and smaller minor league system might narrow the talent pool, NIL may very well keep the young athlete playing baseball, especially if it pays more to be the leadoff man than the second-string quarterback. It is a complex ecosystem, all of it under fire from a grievance-addled culture that, despite its occasional platitudes, fails to recognize the Sisyphean efforts to get in and stay in the game in the decade since Robinson broke the game's color barrier. Scrubbing language from a website might enable the legal department to sleep better at night, but that's just part of the equation. It's incumbent on Major League Baseball to cheerfully refuse compromising what it might call its quote-unquote values. In 2027, Major League Baseball will mark the 80th anniversary of Jackie Robinson boldly erasing much of its exclusionary shame. The celebration will resonate a little more if, in the interim, the industry does not further squander the gains made over decades of starts and stops. And again, that feature is entitled Major League Baseball Needs to Show Some Resilience, written by Gabe Lackus, columnist for USA Today. And in another baseball feature, this one written by Bob Nightingale of USA Today, the headline reads, Ex-General Manager Starts Mental Health Coaching Business. Dateline Scottsdale, Arizona. Jared Porter hung up the phone. He couldn't move. He couldn't speak. He was in an utter state of shock. It was all over. His dream job, his 20-year baseball career, his entire reputation. Porter, hired by the New York Mets to be owner Steve Cohen's first general manager, was fired 38 days later on January 19, 2021. A foreign female reporter revealed to ESPN that Porter had harassed her, sending dozens of inappropriate text messages and a lewd photo in 2016 while he was scouting director of the Chicago Cubs. Porter had informed Mets president Sandy Alderson a day earlier that an article would be coming out and was personally optimistic that the fallout would not be too severe. But when Alderson and Cohen read the published article hours later, they immediately came to the same conclusion. They have no choice but to fire Porter, terminating his 4-year contract. Porter, who had never met Cohen in person or even stepped inside his new Mets office with COVID-19 restrictions at the time, knew that his life would never again be the same. I was devastated, Porter told USA Today Sports. I don't blame them. They didn't have a choice. But I knew I had a choice. One was to let myself sink into the ground and do nothing. Two, I could get angry and take on the world. Or three, I could dive into my mental health. I wanted to immediately get to work and get my life back on track, unquote. Porter, who made the anguishing calls to inform his wife, family, and close friends, couldn't bear to even leave his Phoenix home for 2 days. The Arizona Diamondbacks, where he had worked as a senior vice president and assistant general manager for 4 years, immediately reached out and put him in contact with their employee assistance program. He was directed to a local mental health facility for treatment of addiction and emotional trauma. Porter was admitted 72 hours later to The Meadows, an inpatient behavioral health facility in Scottsdale, where he remained for a week. It was pretty crazy, Porter said. Here I am, trading for Francisco Lindor, and 2 weeks later, I'm in a mental health facility where they wouldn't let me have shoelaces for 48 hours because I was a suicide risk, unquote. Porter, age 45, was transferred to an intensive outpatient center where he spent 3 months. Today, he still undergoes weekly therapy sessions, attends mental wellness retreat centers with his wife, and writes his daily thoughts in journals before going to bed. As crazy as it might sound, I am grateful for everything that happened to me, says Porter, who lives in Naples, Florida, and is a co-founder of Blend, a mental health coaching company. I'm a different person now. I am much more balanced with my feelings and my emotions, and I'm really focused now on helping as many people as I can, unquote. Porter paused, slowly exhales, and says, "If that article never came out, I never would have gone down this path. It made me wake up," unquote. Porter, part of four World Series championship teams with the Boston Red Sox and the Cubs, has spent plenty of time reflecting on his past. He believes he was too committed to making everyone around him happy without caring about himself. He doesn't blame his upbringing in Wayzata, Minnesota, or cite his 48-year-old mother's death in a car accident when he was 21 as a reason for his behavior. Simply, he says, it was a culmination of everything. "The trauma of things just add up where you have vulnerability," Porter said. "You start hiding things. Really, you hide everything. You're so emotionally balled up and you don't have the ability to express your emotions. So you start acting out, whether it's alcohol, drugs, or texting," unquote. Porter remembers the 2013 World Series when he was the Red Sox pro scouting director and responsible for nearly all of their new signings, from Ryan Dempster to Johnny Gomez to David Ross to Mike Napoli. When they defeated the St. Louis Cardinals, he stood in the back of the Fenway Park clubhouse, but instead of celebrating, he simply watched without feeling emotion. "It was the best group of guys I've ever been around, coming off the Boston Marathon bombing and everything else," Porter said. "Everything was going crazy in the celebration, but I remember just standing there. I wasn't sad, but I wasn't happy either. I just cared that they were happy. I just never allowed myself to feel the highs and lows. I was always seeking validation from other people because my greatest fear was not being liked, not being appreciated. That was my greatest nightmare. Then, of course, when that wound up happening to me, I figured nobody liked me. Nobody approved of me. No one validated me," unquote. Porter knew in his years as a baseball scout and working in the player development side that plenty of others were dealing with mental health issues. He also knew most teams were unequipped to help, and those teams that did have resources, players were not ready to fully trust or embrace their therapists. When Red Sox outfielder Jaron Duran revealed on a Netflix documentary this month that he attempted suicide in 2022, pulling a gun to his head and pulling the trigger, Porter applauded his courage for publicly telling his story to help others. When Detroit Tigers assistant general manager Ben Menson resigned weeks into the season after the club discovered that he sent unsolicited lewd photos to several employees and other women, Porter understood the humiliation and despair. Porter is now hoping to help steer others from the same path that led him to a downward spiral. Blend is currently working with about 20 Major League Baseball players along with NHL players, NCAA men's and women's athletes, high school and youth athletes, and private clients, with the counseling fully confidential. "The last 4 years have been very valuable for me on a personal level," Porter said. "I wasn't able to process what I was going through. I believe an incredibly high percentage of people have similar issues," unquote. Sean Walsh, former CEO of Meadows Behavioral Healthcare, believes it's vital that young athletes receive mental health guidance before the problems exacerbate as they get older. "Unfortunately, there is still that stigma," said Walsh, a Blend board member and partner. "People overlook the benefit and need for student-athletes. Too often in mental health, there's only the focus on those struggling and perceived to be struggling. It's also needed for the kids who are doing well, playing sports at every waking moment, because sometimes when they turn 16, they're done. The parents are upset, but they just don't want to do it anymore because they never had a real childhood. I've worked with a lot of professional athletes who were struggling, and sometimes at that age it can become pretty severe and haunt them if not treated earlier. If you can bring attention to mental health at a younger age, you can avoid the trappings that come later in life. Mental health care should be treated just like health care. We all have times that we need it. No one is immune, unquote. It should be identified and treated as early as possible, as Porter can attest, before it's too much too late. In my opinion, a person's ability to find their pause before they hurt themselves physically or emotionally is the key, Porter said. You see how people respond in crisis. Some gamble. Some do drugs. Some drink excessively. Some send texts to women, unquote. Porter's voice drops off. Quote, you can't have growth unless you have awareness, he said. I didn't have any. It took me a full year to have awareness. I know it sounds crazy, but I didn't think anything was wrong with me. I just want to help people have that emotional freedom, a truth balance in their life. I know you can be judged in the darkest moments, but if I can just make a small impact, it will be well worth it, unquote. Porter would love one day to get back into the game, but he refuses to let his success as a young baseball executive define him. I loved baseball. I still love the sport. I watch it all the time, he says. But what I'm doing now, this is the most rewarding thing I've done in my life, unquote. And again, that feature is entitled, Ex-General Manager Starts Mental Health Coaching Business, written by Bob Nightingale of USA Today. And from baseball news, let's turn now to some basketball news. The next headline reads, General Manager admits that he underestimated the fans' love for Luka Doncic. And this feature written by Mark Giannotto of USA Today. After the fourth or fifth question on April 21st about the Luka Doncic trade, Dallas Mavericks general manager Nico Harrison revealed that he had hoped to be done talking about it by now. That was the impetus for meeting off camera with a small group of Dallas-based reporters last week, he said. Chalk it up to another miscalculation by the embattled former Nike executive turned NBA decision maker. Harris's end-of-season news conference turned into another inquiry focused on the fallout from his decision to deal with the franchise's popular star last February in exchange for Anthony Davis and Max Christie. He was asked directly why he shouldn't be fired, defended the rationale behind the trade, promised a championship contender next season, and then eventually admitted that he underestimated the backlash trading Doncic would generate, particularly within the Mavericks fan base. Quote, I did know that Luka was important to the fan base. I didn't quite know it to what level, Harrison said. But really, the way we looked at it is if you're putting a team on the floor that's Kyrie Irving, Klay Thompson, PJ Washington, Anthony Davis, and Derek Lively, we feel that's a championship-caliber team, and we would have been winning at a high level, and that would have quieted some of the outrage. And so, unfortunately, we weren't able to do that, so it just continued to go on and on, unquote. Harrison said his relationship with Mavericks owner Patrick Dumont has improved since the trade because the two speak more frequently now. He pushed back any questions that alluded to whether Dumont or anyone else in the franchise's front office asked or forced him to trade Doncic. He said that Coach Jason Kidd only learned of the deal at the 11th hour. We're kind of linked together to this, so it's made us have a lot more conversations, Harrison said about Dumont. He came out and supported me publicly. I don't take that lightly, and now I have to deliver on that, unquote. Harrison acknowledged hearing Mavericks fans chant, "Fire Nico," on several occasions since the trade. But my job is to make decisions that are in the best interest of this organization, and I got to stand by the decision, he said. Some of them are going to be unpopular, and this was clearly one that is unpopular, unquote. He declined to discuss specifically why he didn't believe Doncic could be part of a championship contender in Dallas, but returned to a familiar refrain since the trade about the importance of defense in winning a title. Harrison, in defending his tenure running the team, indicated once more that he's not willing to concede the trade everyone wants to criticize him for. The immediate aftermath of the Doncic trade did not go in the franchise's favor. Dallas missed the 2025 playoffs after losing in the NBA play-in tournament to the Memphis Grizzlies and saw Davis miss 18 regular season games after aggravating an adductor injury in his Mavericks debut. The Mavericks fans, meanwhile, held protests once Doncic was traded, and the team offered refunds to some fans who canceled their tickets in the wake of the move. The trade also reportedly caused friction between the Mavericks and franchise legend Dirk Nowitzki, who maintains a close relationship with Doncic after the two were teammates during Doncic's rookie season. It is important to say that he is the single most important figure to the franchise, so that's extremely important, Harrison said, without going into further detail when asked about any distance between the organization and Nowitzki. I believe winning will help repair the relationship with the fans, and that's what we plan to do next year, unquote. And again, that feature entitled, "General Manager Admits That He Underestimated the Fans' Love for Luka Doncic," written by Mark Giannotto of USA Today. And from basketball news, let's look at some college football news here in the few minutes we have left. Arizona football. Headline reads, "Four Wildcats Enter the Transfer Portal," written by Justin Spears of the Arizona Daily Star. As expected, Arizona has a few departures in the transfer portal. Arizona defensive tackle Isaiah Johnson, defensive end Sterling Lane, and cornerback Elijah Brown enter the transfer portal on Tuesday. U of A kicker and social media star Cash Peterman entered the transfer portal on Monday. Johnson and Lane were both a part of Arizona's program-changing recruiting class in 2022. The 6'1", 322-pound Johnson appeared in 10 games last season for Arizona and missed some time after suffering a leg injury in pregame warm-ups leading up to the Wildcats' blowout loss to Colorado. The Chandler product had 9 tackles and 2 sacks last season as a redshirt sophomore. After Arizona's spring practices, University of Tennessee at Martin transfer Deshaun McKnight and Texas transfer Tioli Savea have positioned themselves as likely starters at defensive tackle. The Wildcats are also expected to rely on Jarrah Anderson, who was held out last season with a leg injury, and junior college transfer Leroy Palou. Arizona is also adding junior college transfers Ezra Funa and Zach Siapoa, a 6'7", 365-pounder, in the summer. Lane was a four-star recruit as an outside linebacker and edge rusher, but had a minimal role in three-plus seasons at Arizona. Lane had a career-high 25 tackles and a fumble recovery last season. Arizona's projected starters at defensive end are Trey Smith and Dominic Lacio, with redshirt Adua Akodea, Northwestern State transfer Chancellor Owens, and Alcorn State transfer Malachi Bailey, among others, as reserves. Brown's career at Arizona was short-lived after transferring from El Camino College in California in January. The 6'2", 184-pound Brown had 38 tackles, 5 interceptions, and a fumble recovery last season at El Camino College. Brown played one season at El Camino after his career at nearby Narbonne High School. With Peterman in the transfer portal, sophomore Michael Sangdo Medina is currently the only kicker on Arizona's roster. The transfer portal officially closes for new entries on Friday. And again, that feature is entitled Four Wildcats Enter the Transfer Portal, written by Justin Spears of the Arizona Daily Star. That's all the time that we have for this edition of Sports Today. My name is Bill, volunteer reader here at Sun Sounds of Arizona. Have a great evening. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org/broadcast info. And you could hear Sun Sounds on your smart home device.